Welcome to the latest edition of Wax Ecstatic, edition number 10. Yes, we've made it to double digits in episodes. How about that? We are just flying along here. As McFadden and Whitehead once said, there ain't no stopping us now. I'm your host, Matt Salmon, Director of Broadcasting for the Tampa Bay Lightning, just pouring through this old box, monster box of baseball cards, primarily from the 1980s. Got a few from the 90s in here. All from my childhood, collecting way back when I was a teenager, and for some reason I still hung on to a few of them, and it's been a lot of fun going through all of these sets. We're going year by year, set by set, and today we're going to be wrapping up the 1983 sets with one of my favorites and a favorite set of a lot of people, the 1983 top set. And the card that we have pulled, this is great. These are just random pulls here. Mike Torres, card number 743. We'll talk a little bit about Torres, his career, which was really unspectacular, but he will always be remembered, whether he wants to or not, as for advancing the career of one Bucky Dent, or as fans in Boston call him, Bucky Effin' Dent. We'll also talk about the 83 top set, which again is one of my favorites for a number of reasons. And we'll talk about your comments as well. We've got a few to share with you in just a little bit. First, some more housekeeping. As I mentioned in our previous podcast, we'll be posting these on Tuesdays and Fridays. Also, we've got a brand new home for our podcast and also the archives of our podcast, and that is on Audioboom. So if you have an Audioboom account, feel free to follow Wax Ecstatic, as it sounds, as you see it in our Twitter feed. That's Wax, W-A-X, Ecstatic, E-C-S-T-A-T-I-C, as we've got all of our shows up there. And yes, I actually paid a couple dollars to become an annual member here. So please listen to the shows and pass them along to everybody, and follow us along at Audioboom at Wax Ecstatic. As I tell everybody every week, invite one friend to listen to the show and to follow us on Twitter at Wax and Gum Stains. And we've picked up quite a few followers this past week, so thank you so much for spreading the word. Now, speaking of Wax and Gum Stains, got a few comments to pass along to our listeners this week. A couple of regulars, including Sleep Frank, who got me on a little bit of a diatribe in our previous podcast. Of course, he was giving it to me about my dislike for manager cards, which goes back to our 1981 Donruss podcast. Frank chimes in, don't go too hard on the podcast. If you miss a few, no one will mind. Don't burn yourself out on it going too hard at it. Well, Frank, I'm not going to burn myself out on it. I do want to make sure that we deliver this podcast on a fairly regular basis. And, you know, by telling you Tuesdays and Fridays, if you like this podcast and you've been listening long enough, chances are you do, then chances are you'll actually look forward to it. So, you know, on Tuesdays and Fridays, if you don't remember it, you'll see the reminders pop up in our Twitter feed and you'll give it a listen. And we certainly hope that you continue to do so. And by the way, Frank, I also schedule these on Tuesdays and Fridays, not only so that you look forward to it, but as opposed to a lot of other podcasts, I like to put in a little time, a little thought, a little effort, a little bit of production work in this. Still, compared to other audio work I do, there's not as many bells and whistles. This is just a fun little side project for me. But I want to make a podcast that people really do look forward to. I want it to sound good. I want it to have some good content to it. So if you circle your calendars Tuesdays and Fridays to see the latest edition of Wax Ecstatic, great. If you miss one, I'm sure some people won't mind, but you can catch it at Audioboom. And a little dose of humility for me, I realize that I don't have tens of thousands of people listening to this podcast. Certainly not now. In fact, it's really tens of people. But regardless of however many people listen, I always want to create a listening experience that is entertaining for one person at a time. So whether it's 10 people, 10,000 people, or somewhere in between, we go to great lengths to make this podcast fun for everybody, not just me hosting it, but for you listening to it. CLM Design chiming in with a rather nice comment, another great podcast in response to our 1983 Fleer podcast. That was our previous one there. He says that he loves the set as well. And also CLM Design telling me that he's a Blue Jays fan. And just for clarification, I grew up a Blue Jays fan here in Tampa, Florida. I liked the Toronto Blue Jays in the 80s and 90s for some strange reason. But ever since I came back from college, which was 16 years ago, I have been attached to the Tampa Bay Rays. Nowadays, that's very tough. we're kind of going back to hit show performance levels of the Tampa Bay Rays. But still, love the home team, love the Rays. I will admit I do have a little bit of a soft spot for the Toronto Blue Jays, especially since now they've gotten better once again. But thank you for the comments, CLM Design, once again. And also, quick shout out to Freedom Cardboard, who follows us. Freedom Cardboard writing, "Hey, Wax and Gum Stains, I just listened to the latest podcast, and it is good stuff. I'd love for you to share with our members at FCB." So we are posting a message right now to Freedom Cardboard, and that's freedomcardboard.com, just alerting people that we are in existence. And we'll also include them on the Twitter feed. We'll do a Twitter shout out. Their Twitter handle is FCB Sports Cards. That's FCB Sports Cards. Based in Atlanta, Georgia, more than 6,500 followers. So we're all together in this, in collecting baseball cards, whether we are avid collectors now or like me, it was many, many moons ago. So if you're looking for another outlet to share your comments and thoughts and questions about card collecting, do so at Freedom Cardboard. Again, that is FCB Sports Cards on Twitter, or you can follow them on their website at freedomcardboard.com. All right, on to this edition's poll. Again, 1983 Tops is the set we are looking at. Mike Torres, the willing suspect here, card number 743. And let's talk a little bit about the set first and foremost. This is one of my favorite card sets for a number of reasons. Now, in a couple of previous podcasts when talking about Tops, we had two sets that people either love or don't care for. 81 and 82, people either love them or you can have them. For me personally, 81 Tops was a set that I loved. 82 Tops, a set that I, I didn't aggressively go get. But 83 Tops, pretty much universally a favorite for all card collectors, not just back then, but certainly now. Now, a lot of it is for the design, which we'll get into in just a little bit, but certainly the star power of the cards. You had the three big rookies in 1983, Ryan Sandberg, Wade Boggs, and Tony Gwynn. Of course, the unique thing about the Tony Gwynn rookie card that year, you had Gwynn wearing number 53, a spring training shot from a previous year. Of course, he wore number 19 in San Diego for his entire career. But a neat little thing from the 83 Top set, you've got that Tony Gwynn card with the different number. And that's not completely unusual with some rookie cards. And it's not just in baseball, it's in all other sports where you've got the guy in his rookie season and he's wearing a different number because it's from training camp, or maybe he had a cup of coffee in the big leagues and just played a handful of games and that was just the number he was handed. But a neat little side thing there. Now, another interesting note from the 83 Top set in terms of the big three rookies that year, Ryan Sandberg's rookie card, the one card where he's featured in a Cubs home uniform. If you look at the 83 Fleer and the 83 Donruss sets with the Ryan Sandberg rookie, he's wearing the old, god-awful blue Cubs road uniform with the white pinstripes, which are just really, you know, they look like pajamas, really. I think I had a pair of those back in 1982. Now, the 83 Top set did everything completely different when compared to the 82 Top set, and that is a very good thing. The 82 Top set, as we discussed a few podcasts ago, you had dark photos, you had the weird little hockey stick thing coming down the side, a very generic design on the front, on the back, very hard to read. You have the purple text on top of the two different shades of green on the background. 83, right out the window. In fact, this is eerily similar to the 1963 Top set in that you had a primary photo followed by a secondary photo in a circle on the front of the card, and then the player's name, his position, and the team that he played for. Now, the 63 top set, the primary photo was often a staged photo, a posed photo. Most baseball cards back in the 60s were. And the little inset photo, if you will, was also often staged. It was kind of a posed action shot most of the time. But it was also this weird black and white or sepia-toned picture that almost looked like it was cut out of a newspaper and just pasted into the little circle where the picture was. So there are some similarities there, but really the 83 top set going above and beyond with the design on the front, because there's a lot of things that they managed to cram into the front of this little baseball card, but it all magically works. You have mostly action shots as the primary picture. You've got a pose shot, although, you know, more of like a mug shot on the field, and they were able to meld that together rather nicely. The player's name, position, and team, and even though there's a lot of stuff on there, Topps was able to, through design of the borders, through the full color photos, which are, in my opinion, in general, much brighter, more livelier than what we saw in the 82 set, really come up with a winning design, which again harkens back to 1963. But in 1983, this was a completely different, much brighter, livelier look. Now you flip the card over and we've got the picture of the Mike Torres card, number 743. And the first thing you notice is you can actually read it. You didn't have purple text on top of a green background. Instead, you had black text on top of a light orange background, and the outer frame of the background was the natural cardstock color, that kind of brownish gray that Topps was still using in 1983. A much more pleasurable experience if you actually wanted to read the stats or some of the trivial tidbits that they threw in. So much easier to do it with 83 tops than 82 tops. And for a nice little touch, up in the upper left-hand corner, you have the silhouette of a baseball player swinging a bat, the Topps logo on top of it. Again, it kind of works. Now, Topps putting their name on the front and back of the cards, something they did not do in a lot of their previous issues. Again, the competition really heating up by 1983, not only in numbers of competing card brands, with Fleer and Donruss joining the race in 1981, but as we've found out, going through all three sets from 1983, much improved products, especially Fleer. Donruss was very similar to 1982 in 1983, but Topps was able to answer the bell by coming out with one of the best sets they had come out in years. In fact, now, even though I liked the 81 set and a couple of the other previous sets, this 83 Topps set is probably one of the best since maybe 76, 77. I like those sets, but then you could really go back even further into the early 70s, really just a winning set from top to bottom here for Topps in 1983. In fact, it was such a good design, as we'll discuss in a few podcasts from now, the 1984 Topps set would be eerily similar, but also just as popular, not only because of design, but certainly some of the cards that you could get out of it. Now, as for Mike Torres, the guy that we pulled out of this monster box here, as I mentioned earlier, he had a very average career, a lengthy career, though, which is pretty spectacular considering you look at his numbers. Other than just a few occasions, nothing really stood out. He was an amateur free agent signed by the Cardinals in 1964, 18 years of major league experience. He started with the Cardinals in 67, didn't win a World Series title with them, but was part of that championship team. Overall, Torres' career numbers, 185 wins, 160 losses, an earned run average of 3.96. Strikeout to walk ratio, I mean, pretty much 50-50. 1,404 strikeouts to 1,371 walks. And you look at his career, he often led, whether it was the American League or the National League, he often led that respective league in base on balls and earned runs. And those are two categories you don't want to lead in. Not earned run average, earned runs, the number of runs that he gave up. So Mike Torres was not a spectacular pitcher. This is a guy who was very average, but he did have a few career highlights, including being part of not one but two big trades. As I mentioned, he was a member of the Cardinals for a while. Well, then he got traded to the Montreal Expos in 1971. After the 74 season, the Expos traded him and Ken Singleton to Baltimore for Bill Kirkpatrick, Rich Coggins, and Dave McNally. Now, Kirkpatrick never made it out of the minor leagues. Coggins and McNally, their careers were pretty much done by them. Well, right before the 1976 season, Torres was on the move again, along with teammates Don Baylor and Paul Mitchell. They went out west to Oakland for Bill Van Bommel, Ken Holtzman, and Reggie Jackson. Now, Van Bommel never made it out of the minor leagues. Ken Holtzman was wrapping up a pretty good career. Reggie Jackson, though, of course, his brief stop over in Baltimore before signing with the New York Yankees in 1977. Now, in 77, Reggie and Mike Torres would be reunited. In April of 77, Torres traded from Oakland to the Yankees for Doc Ellis, Larry Murray, and Marty Perez. And Mike Torres, a guy who did not have a very spectacular career, did have a very spectacular World Series against the LA Dodgers in 77. He started two games. He went the distance in both games, had 15 strikeouts to five walks. His earned run average in the series was a 2.50. And he was the pitcher who not only won Game 6 against the Dodgers for the Yankees' first World Series victory since 1962, he also caught the final out in Game 6. So Mike Torres, a hero in the Bronx, in New York City for long-suffering Yankees fans, a hero for about six more weeks. He was granted free agency by the Yankees and signed with the dreaded Boston Red Sox. And Yankees fans gave it to him every day in 78, called him a traitor, called him every name in the book, and they hated him until...
Deep to left. Yastrzemski will not get its home run. Bucky Dent. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill White with the call of the infamous Bucky Dent home run, which gave the Yankees the lead for good in the American League East tiebreaker game to end the 1978 season. The Yankees would go on to the World Series. They would once again beat the Dodgers to become back-to-back world champions. And Mike Torres's name in Yankee fandom was suddenly great once again, because once again, he helped the Yankees win a World Series. As for Boston, yeah. Now, over time, Red Sox fans' disdain went against Bucky Dent. As I mentioned, they called him Bucky Effin' Dent from that point on. And they still do, even though the Red Sox have won a couple of World Series since then. But think 1978. At that point in time, the Red Sox had gone 60 years without a World Series championship. This was something that they were just eager to get back into, and Torres gives up that pitch to Bucky Dent, who, you know, Dent was not a very hard-hitting player, to put it nicely. So poor Mike Torres caught the brunt of the wrath of the Red Sox fans for many, many years. He stayed with the Red Sox until 1983. Interestingly, he was traded right before the 83 season, January 13th, 1983, to the New York Mets. So Topps kind of caught in a jam here, very much like the upstart Fleer and Donruss sets would be. They were issuing a card at the beginning of the season for a player who didn't play on the team that he was depicted with. So if you had this 83 Topps card of Mike Torres, he was already a member of the Mets by the time you pulled it out of the wax pack. The Mets were thanked for by Torres's not-so-stellar 1983 season, as he put up 10 wins and 17 losses. He would get traded in 84 back to Oakland, and then he would wrap up his pro career. He didn't even make it through the 84 season. He was released by the A's on August 9th, 1984. Now, looking through some research on Mike Torres, because here's a guy who really just could have been, you know, beaten down by the experience of giving up that home run to Bucky Dent and giving the Yankees that opportunity to win a World Series again. New York Daily News did a story on Torres back in 2009. And, you know, Torres said that he's actually glad. I shouldn't say glad. I'm paraphrasing here. He's actually not upset that he was part of that historic home run by Bucky Dent because, well, it keeps his name in the news. And anytime the Yankees and Red Sox get together, you see that highlight. Anytime you're talking about the Yankees' glory days in the late 70s or the long suffering that Red Sox fans had to go through. Because after 78, remember, the Red Sox kind of fell off a cliff there for a few years. It would take them a little while to build themselves back up to a contender in the mid-80s. So anytime you talk about the Red Sox history or the history of the rivalry with the Yankees or great moments in playoff history in Major League Baseball, you always see the Bucky Dent home run, and you always see poor Mike Torres just tossing that beach ball at Dent to hit over the Green Monster. And you feel bad for him. But for Mike Torres, this is how he's still been able to kind of stay in the public for almost 40 years now. So at least publicly in this newspaper story here with the New York Daily News from a few years back, at least he was somewhat positive. Or trying to pull out a positive from that experience. Not all that different from Ralph Branca, who, of course, gave up the pennant-winning home run to Bobby Thompson in 1951. Ralph Branca, who could have just taken it really hard for many, many years, eventually he and Thompson were going to baseball card shows, and they were signing pictures and baseball cards together, you know, signing the same ball and the same card and the same photographs. So, you know, Ralph Branca found a way to get around it and make a few bucks off of it. I'm sure Mike Torres has as well. Now, Torres was the general manager for the Newark Bears of the Atlantic League, the independent Atlantic League of Professional Baseball. He was only in that position for just a couple of years. The Newark Bears aren't even in existence anymore. They folded, I want to say, 3 or 4 years ago. So Mike Torres dabbled in management for a little bit. But as far as we know, he is still enjoying a world championship with the Yankees in 77, the notoriety of opening the door for Yankees world championship in 1978. And for a guy who had a very average career, I should mention he was a 20-game winner for Baltimore in 75, but for a guy who overall had a pretty average career, he's done fairly well to keep his name out there. And it's all because of one grooved pitch to Bucky Dent in 1978 that's keeping it going. So there you go, Mike Torres, our pull, card number 743 of the 1983 top set. And even though Torres pictured here with the Red Sox wasn't a member of the Red Sox at that point in time, he'd already moved on to the Mets. This is just one final reminder of the rather ignominious connection that he had with the Red Sox and the Red Sox fans through the 83 top set. But again, for the most part, from what we know, he was able to take it in stride and just kind of deal with the loss of being on the short end of the stick of baseball history. What do you think about the 83 top set or the 83 sets in general? Make your comments known at Wax and Gum Stains on Twitter. Don't forget you can listen to this show and any other show whenever you want to via Audio Boom. Just look for our account, Wax Ecstatic, and look for our next podcast. It's coming your way Tuesday as we move on to one of my favorite years just in life, 1984, but also one of my favorite sets because finally Donruss got it right. We'll do a random card pull for 84 Donruss in our next podcast. I'm your host, Matt Salmon. Thanks again for tuning in to Wax Ecstatic.